What I find interesting about these two books that we're talking about is they each begin with a "He has risen" quote, but a "He has risen" quote, but a different "He has risen" quotes, which shows that Mike put in a little bit more legwork than he even had to, because he could have used the same "He has risen" quote twice.
That's right. Yeah. Well, these are all kind of, we'll talk about it more, but these are kind of like mushed together versions of all the different stories together.
Mm. Yeah.
There's slight differences. I mean, the basic story is the same.
Right.
I'm not going to go into that detail because honestly, I don't know. I'm not that biblically literate. As a cradle Episcopalian, we're not, you know, chapter and verse quoters generally.
You get the general idea out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the names right. That's important.
It's in there somewhere. I think it's in Romans. I'm not sure.
One thing that's, well, we'll get to it. But like, one thing I find fascinating about these books is the little details he does include that I don't typically see in every children's Easter story. There's a few little specifics that I was like, oh, right. He's a guy who delights in details. And so he's like, I'll just throw in this little character, this little bit you may not have heard in your other children's books. So I have the guest read the quote at the beginning. So I guess pick one you like and go for it.
Are we starting with the very first Easter?
We'll be starting with the Easter story, but we're kind of just going to bop back and forth because they're kind of the same thing.
You want me to cite the chapter and verse or just read the
Please
quote?
Please do.
Okay. He is not here. He has risen. Luke 24:6.
Phenomenal. That's all I ask. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and look at all my trials and tribulations. Sinking in a gentle pool of wine. Don't disturb me now. I can see the answer. Till the evening is the morning, life is fine. That's right, we are discussing the last days of Jesus here on Deep in Bear Country. The last days of Jesus as encapsulated in two Berenstain Bears books that discuss that very thing. One of the more controversial Berenstain Bears books, the one that Mike himself said, I absolutely do not want to write this or illustrate this, and which the publishers were like, look, don't worry about it. We've been publishing VeggieTales books for years and no one has been struck down by lightning. And that is the anecdote that Mike told me as to what got him to finally write a Berenstain Bears Easter story. But I can't handle this by myself. That would be ridiculous. I can't throw my weight around on this one. So I've brought into the studio today, and by into the studio, I mean I'm talking long distance, to a guest who you are familiar with, who has been on the show numerous times to discuss all things bears and all things religious. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back to the show, Reverend Lauren. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, Phil. Good to be here.
It is great to have you here to talk about Easter, talk about Jesus, talk about children's interpretations of the Bible.
Yeah. I'll give you a spoiler. These aren't that bad.
Yeah. I actually agree. I did a little looking around at other versions of the story, and Mike lays it out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're talking about two books, 2012's The Berenstain Bears and the Easter Story, and 2013's The Berenstain Bears, The Very First Easter, mostly because they pretty much do the same thing. They tell the story of the last days of Jesus and his resurrection, and they do it with bears, with cartoon bears. The first one being the sort of meta-textual, the bears are enacting the story of Jesus. Because Mike was at that point uncomfortable drawing Jesus as a bear, so he was like, "I'll fudge it a little bit by having it be a play within their world, But then by the next year, he was like, fine. He just drew the story of Jesus.
And some of the drawings are exactly the same.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, why?
Kind of like he just took it from the first book and put it in the next book.
Why mess with perfection?
Exactly right. It's called working smarter, not harder.
Harder, right. And by harder, we know, because at this point, he was still putting out, I think they were putting out 12 books a year.
Oh,
so,
geez.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh, geez. So, mm-hmm. So you know a little bit about the Jesus story.
A little bit.
Yeah, you're familiar with the tale,
mm-hmm.
And not just through pop culture. You've studied this stuff.
Yes, I have a big fancy master's degree in Latin. If you want to come see it, I don't speak Latin though. So
no, but
I guess
does,
it says
really?
I graduated. I don't know.
And if I ever am down your way, I will pop in just to see your master's degree. what is that picture behind you, by the way? There is a picture on your.
That is a Norwegian troll. My great aunt, my grandfather, and my great aunt were from Norway, and she passed away, and I inherited her hook rug
mm-hmm.
that she made in the 70s of a Norwegian troll. That's him.
It's delightful. I love the troll.
Yeah, he's my favorite guy.
Listeners are just going to have to leave it up to their imaginations what the troll looks like.
I'll post a picture on Facebook for you.
That would be awesome. I'll share the picture of the troll. That is the kind of attention to detail you get on Deep in Bear Country. So the first book, the Berenstain Bears and the Easter Story, is there's a little bit of a setup to this one. As I discovered in my reading of several published children's Easter plays, a very familiar setup. This is how a lot of them begin, actually. Would you mind filling us in on the bookends to the story of Jesus?
Of the book, you mean?
the book.
Okay.
how the book chooses to frame getting into this tale.
Well, they're using the very familiar refrain of, I love Easter because I love candy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Easter Bunny is going to bring me candy, 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 candy.
Mm-hmm.
To quote Garfield. Anyway,
I was going to say, you literally just quoted Garfield.
I did. I love that. I love that TV special. But yeah, we got peeps. We got eggs. We got Hershey Kisses or Smirshy Smishes.
Yes.
Bunnies and chocolate bunnies and jelly beans and just like
they
kids
even have
just...
one of those little Easter bunny chocolates that are shaped like an oval and wrapped in really highly detailed foil.
Yeah, that always tastes like garbage, but mm-hmm. they look cool.
The Berenstains are famous for drawing candy that looks so good you just want to stare at it for a while, and I would say this page captures the essence of illustrated candy that you just want to like pop in your mouth.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah. But they're heading towards the little chapel that we have talked about in the past.
Oh, my favorite little chapel, my Presbyterian chapel.
now what makes their chapel Presbyterian?
Yes. Well, we had our long discussion about church architecture, but generally in the Presbyterian church, generally speaking, the focus is more on the word, the teachings that, mm-hmm. you know, of God and therefore the preacher. So the pulpit is right in the middle of the church, right in front and center and up high. And
yeah.
It's shaped like a ship. So that is kind of very, all Episcopal church. I'm Episcopalian. All the Episcopal churches, the roofs are the insides of a boat to symbolize that we're all in the ship together.
Together.
So that set screams to me Presbyterian, because right front and center is this pulpit, and that's the main focus of the service. Whereas like in my church, generally the altar is the main focus of the service, because we're very Eucharistic. So, and then when I heard your interview with Mike, he said he grew up Presbyterian, and I was like, I totally called it. Woo! My master's degree was not wasted.
I could identify a picture in a children's book.
Yes, it was all $100,000 worth it.
Can Presbyterian churches function as boats?
Well, I don't know. If you watch that show Millennium on Fox, yes. I did watch that whole show. So yes, in the end, they go to Idaho and they're in a church boat.
Congratulations on being the first person to ever bring up Millennium on Deep in Bear Country. Almost 7 years and we finally got to it. So the cums are all into the candy. As you said, the peeps, the jelly beans, the chocolate bunnies. And Mrs. Ursula, their Sunday school teacher, is like, as you would suspect, her favorite Easter candy is the black jelly beans.
Yeah, I wrote heresy, a witch. Licorice jelly beans. Ugh.
And not even real licorice, but like that fake Brock's fake licorice.
Ugh. I'm like, ew, that's the worst candy. Like that blackjack gum we used to chew as kids.
Did you chew flavor. Blackjack gum as did you chew? Was this a case of there only being blackjack gum around?
No, we like to put it on our teeth and pretend we didn't have teeth. I grew up in a rural town. We didn't have a lot to do.
But lots of blackjack gum.
Yeah.
My dad was really into black jelly beans. They were his favorite. I think there was like a certain subset of dad who was like, you signed an agreement that was like, in order to have a slightly easier time at other things, you had to agree to be the person who ate the black jelly beans. But in the background of their Sunday school, you see a couple of posters depicting stories from other points in the Bible. We see a Noah's Ark poster and a David and Goliath poster. And the funny thing about the David and Goliath poster is it's a simplified version of the David and Goliath illustration from their book about David and Goliath, the Berenstain Bears. I think it has something to do with a stand up to bullies or something.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Does it have a long description of Goliath's outfit with specific measurements like the Bible does?
It does not. It skims over that one. Also skims over the whole decapitation part at the end. But that part's typically brushed past. But the Ursula, Mrs. Ursula, as you said, the sea witch is like, you know, there's more to Easter than just candy. And the kids are like, yeah, we know. We've been coming to Sunday school for the last few years of our lives. But they seem a little vague on the subject. And I'm like, Brother Bear is supposed to be like 8 or 9 at this point. You think he could jump in a little bit with some of the Easter story.
Yeah, you'd think so. And then Miss Ursula says, maybe it's time we learned a little more about this Bible stuff. And I wrote, wow, imagine talking about the Bible at Sunday school. A novel idea.
Right.
What have you been doing, lady? Come on.
Yeah. You know what? We've covered Easter quite a bit over the last few decades. I want to introduce you to what I consider the main character of the story. A little guy named Jesus. She's just been showing reruns of The Easter Bunny Is Coming to Town like over and over again. She's like, I'm wondering why the kids don't get more out of this Easter thing. This is typical of the Berenstain Bears, where you want to introduce a concept to the children reading it, but you have to include Brother Bear in the story. So he can't know anything about it.
He kind of comes off as being not the brightest bulb, I guess.
Right. Or he simply
he's the
wasn't.
Foil.
I mean, he wouldn't be the first kid who wasn't paying attention in Sunday school. I'll give him that.
Yes. I don't think I paid much attention in Sunday school when I was little. I mean, I don't barely remember it, honestly.
I know I've shared these stories in the past, but I had to go to Sunday school when I stayed with my grandparents, when we'd spend the night or whatever. And we go to Sunday school in the morning. Was not a regular churchgoer, but I have a vivid memory of a teacher teaching the story of Jonah and the whale, and her not really explaining anything about why Jonah ended up in the whale, but her spending a good portion of time on what the whale's vomit looked like after Jonah came out of the whale. And she really described the vomit, like a lot. And that's all I remembered from that. I was like, I don't know why he was in a fish, but I know that there was a lot of vomit at the end of the story.
Yeah, we tend to focus on the fish and not the actual story. But when I took biblical Hebrew for a year, I don't remember much, so don't ask. But we studied that story, and the fish changes gender in between sentences. And since the holy scribes are infallible, it could not have been an error.
Right.
So there's whole, like, you know, books written about why the fish changed gender. Right. Teacher delighted in telling us all about it. And I'll tell you off mic about that story, because it's not very child friendly, but it was just one of those things. And we were like, well, it could have just been an error. And my teacher's like, no, the scribes were infallible. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Right. Well, speaking of the infallible, Mrs. Ursula decides to, the best way to teach the kids about the story of Easter is to bring them into a rehearsal of an Easter play.
Yeah, it's the old show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty, from what I've was able to read in my practical research, this is a fairly typical Easter play. Mm-hmm. In kind of the way it moves forward, in the way it, you know, it highlights just the major PowerPoint of this story.
A lot of it's edited out. A lot of like the bloody stuff is edited out for
yeah,
the kids.
Yeah, you don't see the scourging of Jesus in this version of the story. So let's walk a little bit through the telling of the tale by, I guess, the older kids. I guess this is the older kids doing it. None of the actors are called out by name.
Yeah, they kind of just look like generic bear drawings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These are
your teenager bear. Here's your teenager bear.
Right.
This one's a girl because it has a kerchief on, and this one's a boy.
And some of them have headbands, which I'm not sure if the headbands are meant to indicate apostle or cool girl. Because typically in the Berenstain Bears, a bear with a headband means you're a cool older girl. But I don't think that's the case as far as the costumers of the Easter story went.
No.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they say long ago in the Holy Land, there was a man named Jesus. Right so far.
Accurate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He traveled the countryside teaching about God and what God wanted for his people. All right. Many listened to Jesus and followed him. There you go.
Perfect so far. Got it. Except for the God is not a gendered being, but. That's my little pet
right,
peeve.
Right. But not unlike something you would hear in church.
Right.
Right. Then we get into some of the miracles.
Yeah. Your mom bullying you into making wine so you can party. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. That represents the abundance of God's grace.
There you go.
And, there you go. I did a sermon on this a little while back. So.
And Jesus looks pretty proud of himself. Turning the water into wine.
He's very smug about it. He didn't actually want to do that, though, in the story. His mother was like, hey, son, go make more wine because I want to party. We need to party more. And he was like, no, my time has not yet come, woman, he says. And then she's like, come on. And he says, okay. That's how I imagine it.
Right. And then he uses his Bene Gesserit training. And turns the water into wine.
I love those costumes in the new Dune. It's just it's a cope, which is a fancy cape that we wear, mm-hmm. and a helmet and a staff. And I'm like, I could totally just wear that.
Yeah.
Go get a big spaceman helmet and I could just walk around.
You could. You should, actually.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, with your Gum Jabbar and your, I don't know. I can't remember any other technical.
I would have to get the glossary from the first movie. When we rented the 84 Dune, mm-hmm. it came with a paper with the glossary of words on it the DVD case.
It should. I just got through reading Dune out loud to my 11-year-old. And that's a technical book. I haven't read it in a few years. And I was like, it gets in the weeds a little bit.
It's like when you read anything by Michael Crichton, he goes on like long, long chapters worth of like technical jargon. And I'm like, just get to the, you know, the monkey, the gorilla that talks and smashes people's skulls in. Yeah. Like, I don't care about radar, you know, whatever.
And then if you get into his later books, it's all about denying global warming. So that was a fun twist in his whole career.
Yeah, that took a turn.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of twists.
So, yeah. The next miracle. he makes a man walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this kid is doing some real method acting.
Yeah, he's like all wiggly. He's got all like mm-hmm. the wiggly lines indicating that he's being all wobbly.
It's like when I think Bradley Cooper played the Elephant Man, and And like whenever an actor would play the elephant man on stage and there's no makeup used, you would just you would have to just sort of contort your body, and you would have to, like, they would hire like physical therapists to work with the actors because it's dangerous to contort your body that much for that extended mm-hmm. a period of time. So that's what this kid is totally method, because this kid's like twisting up his legs. His one of his legs is bending the wrong way. It's yeah, it's pretty intense. Like I hope he wins the competition.
The twist on this is that bear is Christian Baler Bear. It didn't quite work. Christian Bear.
You can't just say Christian Bear because they're all Christian bears.
I know, but it's a young Christian bear.
Yeah.
He's going to become pounds. Bat Bear.
Yeah. Lost 45 pounds for this role. So it says Jesus could do these things because he was the Son of God. He was called the Christ, which is a name for a king. But Jesus' kingdom is the kingdom of heaven.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And that's accurate.
That was one of those little details that I didn't tend to see in a lot of the children's Easter stories that I was looking at. Mike took the time and he's like, I'm just going to explain to you a little bit about this terminology, which you've probably heard your whole life, but maybe an adult hasn't sat down and explained to you what it means. Because I know when I was a kid, I just thought Christ was his last name.
Well, according to my cousins, it was Jesus tap dancing Christ.
Oh boy.
On a crutch. Anyway.
I bet that's not part of your sermon.
No. Well, it might make it in as an anecdote one day.
Yeah.
But I mean, the kingdom of God is not on earth, it's in heaven. Or heaven is a place on earth. Which is actually more accurate, because we're supposed to be making God's kingdom on earth now by following Jesus' teachings.
Oh, not by building bigger and larger houses of worship?
No. So I always tell people, I say, life is not, you know, a checklist of good deeds to get to the kingdom of God in heaven. The afterlife, whatever it is, nobody knows, because no one's ever come back from there. Well, except Jesus, I guess.
I was going to say, wait a minute. Jesus. I have a book right here in my hand.
Yeah. But he didn't say much about what the afterlife looks like, except that everybody's equal. So that's fine. I like that. But we're supposed to be striving to make that here now while we're still alive, so that the world will be a better place. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Not just, you know, gathering good deeds, not like the good place where you get your points and then you go to the good place or the bad place. I love that show. But anyway.
But what's interesting is that they point out the whole, like, in the second book, in the very first Easter, Mike really goes into the whole kingdom of heaven, him being the king of the kingdom of heaven, and how the people were misinterpreting that and feeling politically threatened by him. Like,
yes, that's actually very accurate as well. He mentions it briefly in this one. He says they were afraid that Jesus would become too powerful.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't understand about the story when I learned it as a kid. Like, that the political ins and outs of this, like why a religious leader would be threatening to people in power. I couldn't quite. I had tons of Bible storybooks as a kid, stacks of them, and I never was really able to put the two and two together. And I think that Mike does and I keep saying Mike, even though this is credited to Mike and Jan, Mike was really the one running with this. I think he does a good job at sort of finding the way the story links together. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a series of kind of just tableau, like here he is entering Jerusalem, here he is on trial. Like, this is why this thing happened.
Yeah, because they were waiting for the Messiah, right? And it's supposed to be from the line of David. So if you think of King David, mm-hmm. even though he had many bad aspects to his personality,
we talked about that. Talked about that a little bit in the last episode.
Yeah, he was a great king, and he smote all the enemies and made the Israelites the number one, right? Mm. So they were thinking like, oh, this Messiah is gonna be like King David and gonna overthrow the oppressive government and save us. So that was what people thought,
right?
That was what they wanted. But then Jesus showed up and said, no, I'm not gonna smite anybody, we're supposed to love. But, you know, then it went up the chain. Like, they thought he's going to overthrow us like a warrior king would. So let's kill him.
Yeah. And a lot of the wait a minute, you were supposed to be a military leader. Is covered in the Last Temptation of Christ. They expound mm-hmm. upon that in the novel and in the movie a lot. Like Judas feeling betrayed by Jesus because Judas thought he was getting a revolutionary leader as opposed to someone with a revolutionary idea.
And even John the Baptist, and before he was beheaded, he was all for Jesus. He's like, I'm just paving the way for Jesus, and I'm not worthy to untie his sandals, right? But then later he sends his followers to go ask Jesus, are you the one that's going to save us or what? Because he was in jail. He's like, did I make a mistake? Did I make a huge mistake following you? Because you're not saving me. I'm in jail.
Yeah.
He's like, King Herod has me in jail and you're not saving anybody. What's going on? And then Jesus was like, nah, man, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to heal everybody. You know.
And John's like, but I'm going to be okay, right?
Yeah, I'll be fine, right? Herod likes me, right? It's like, then the wife sneaks in.
right. Then there's this whole dance, and then things get out of hand.
Which is non-consequent, yeah. Very overblown, but.
Then there's like a play written by Oscar Wilde. So, but that's time. That's another Berenstain Bears book. So the political leaders, or just, I guess it just says the people, many people. We're afraid that Jesus would become too powerful. And you see Jesus hand on hip, wagging his finger at them.
This Jesus is so smug. His eyes are half shut the whole time. And he's just like, yeah, I'm on a donkey. What?
And one bear is really focused on Jesus's pointing finger.
Yeah, he's like, a finger.
Looking for signs and portents, I guess. But then Jesus jumps on a donkey. And carries a donkey.
Yeah, he's holding a cardboard donkey, which I thought was a nice detail.
Right, just so you don't forget, this is a play.
He's
carrying, it's a donkey not unlike many a production of Into the Woods. Their milky white cow is has a handle on it. Jesus carries the donkey into the holy city of Jerusalem. And it says that as he rode into the holy city on the donkey, crowds of people greeted him. They shouted, Hosanna, which means save us. And the leaders of the city grew worried, was Jesus becoming too powerful? And you see them waving their palm leaves, and they're shouting Hosanna.
We will be doing that, not this Sunday, next Sunday is Palm Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have our palms. They're coming in the mail. They come from Alamo, Texas.
Ooh, I don't know where that is. I'm from Texas. I don't know where Alamo is.
That's where the Alamo is, I assume. No, I remember it.
No, it's San Antonio.
Oh, it is? Okay. Well, you come from Alamo, Texas.
The Alamo. It's the chapel of the Alamo. Thank you. None of the actual fighting occurred in the chapel.
I imagine that.
I just got through reading a whole book on the history of the Alamo. Come to find out, that was all fought so that the Texans could keep their slaves. Thank you, everyone. It was not a very heroic battle.
Yeah, like most wars.
Yeah. But what is the purpose of the palm leaves, of the palm branches?
Well, they were waving the palms and then putting them down for him to go over so he didn't have to walk on the ground. So it's kind of like a red carpet type thing.
And it's funny because in this book, the palms are down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other book, they're walking along next to him.
Waving them, yeah.
Waving the palms.
I think it was more like you wave them and then you put them on the ground. We're not mm-hmm. sure. There's no mention of it in the actual stories, the palms. Like, I'm not actually sure where the tradition of the palms comes from.
I was wondering about that because I know that a lot of like children's books of the story, there's a tradition, obviously, going back hundreds upon hundreds of years of passion plays. And Easter plays and reenacting all of this for large crowds of people. There was a very famous Minnesota one that ran until the late 90s, I think, that had like a cast of like 150 people with the animals on the stage. And And so this is a, you know, acting out this story is a tradition. And how many of these things like the palms came from those traditions?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure somebody has traced it back. I mean, the Passion Play in Oberammergau, I think, is the most famous.
Right. That's like the oldest, right?
Yeah, they did it because of the end of the Hundred Years' War. They were giving thanks that the war ended, and they promised they would do it forever.
Yeah.
In thanks. Every 10 years, they have this huge production, and the town is all swarmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someday I might want to go to that, but you got to get tickets like 20 years in advance.
I bet.
Yeah, it's hard to get tickets to it.
That's some planning ahead.
Yeah. I've been to Oberammergau. It's a very cute town.
Aw. Did you tell them that?
Well, no, because we got lost trying to find the bus and we were running around.
Your town is cute cottages. But confusing.
It is. And we're like, the bus is by the blouse store. Where's the blouse store?
So then the story skips right over the Last Supper mm-hmm. and gets right to the Garden of Gethsemane. But in the other book, there is the illustration, you know, you have your typical, you know, depiction of the Last Supper with everyone sitting on one side of the table, more or less.
Yeah, separate checks, to steal a joke from Mel Brooks.
Yep. does not place Judas on the other side, like some paintings did in the traditional depiction.
I saw a meme that said, like, I need a table for 24. And they're like, well, you only have 12 of you. He's like, well, we're all going to sit on the same side.
Yeah. They all sit on the same side. I mean, clearly you would do that because you're painting a big table.
And you right. For pay, yeah. It's like in a sitcom, you know, they all sit on one side to
of
eat.
Of course. And you never see that fourth wall. Yeah. But it mentions in the second book, the very first Easter, it mentions that it happens during the Feast of Passover. And as you pointed out online the other day, you were like, there's a common misconception among people that it happened during a Seder, which wasn't a thing.
No, Seders didn't exist yet back then. Right. You did have a meal.
Yeah.
Like a holy meal. But the actual ceremony of the Seder didn't come about until fairly recently in time. I'm not sure when, but not 2,000 years.
Right.
So this was not a Seder. A lot of Christian churches will have a Seder on Maundy Thursday because the Last Supper night is Thursday, then Good Friday. So Thursday we wash feet in church. And that's the Last Supper, in quotes. And so some churches will have like a Seder, in quotes, beforehand and like do the, like download a copy of a service from and then do it. And I'm like, this is so disrespectful. No. We are not Jewish. Jesus did not have the horosis and the horseradish and the bitter herbs and the salt water. Like, no, that's not our tradition. And we shouldn't insult our Jewish brothers and sisters by doing a pantomime of it. You know, just like we don't like it when people pretend to do a church service. You know, some places don't like that. So I always say, if you want to experience a real Seder, I can call one of my rabbi colleagues and see if they will invite us over to have one with them.
Right.
Where we can participate in whatever fashion they see the fit, but we're not going to do it. Like, that's ridiculous.
And I can understand where the confusion comes from. Like, if you're just sort of reading the story and you're like, oh, it's a dinner, it's at Passover, I'm assuming there's bread, there's wine, I know that's a thing. So I can see where people kind of started conflating the two.
Right, and you break the bread in the so you break the bread and you share it, you pass it around. The first person says the prayer, breaks the bread, and then you pass it. And then you have the wine, they say the prayer, and then everybody drinks it. So it's very similar.
Mm-hmm. But...
But it's not the same thing.
And at this Passover dinner, they're just eating large loaves of bread and mashed potatoes. So
no edamame this time?
No, as you can see, it's just bread and mashed potatoes at the Last Supper.
Oh, wow. Sounds good to me.
But the very first Easter version talks about Jesus dividing by breaking bread, pouring out wine. And it goes into the bread is and wine is like my body and my blood. Eating and drinking these things will remind you of me.
In remembrance of me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a little slightly different verbiage. Remind in remembrance is. Mm-hmm. I find in remembrance is a little more serious. You know.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's not so much like, so every time you eat a loaf of bread, think of your friend Jesus. It's a little, There's a little more to it than that.
I mean, but these books are good. That's why I have to be nitpicky on little details.
Yeah, no.
There's nothing, there's no huge glaring, you know,
they do
horrible
seem,
thing.
In the illustration, they do seem just like, oh, delicious. Like, he's telling him this, and the two bears who are drinking the wine and eating the bread are like...
chug-a-lugging that wine. Yeah.
Like, just pouring it down his gullet. It's like, John, slow down. I did like in Jesus Christ Superstar, though, during the Last Supper song, there is the whole, like, they slowly get drunker as the scene progresses. Mm-hmm. Not in a hilarious way, but just in a, yeah, we're just eating a lot of bread and drinking a lot of wine, and they get sleepy and they all fall asleep. And I'm always like, I like that that kind of explains a little bit of the whole we didn't wake up part.
Right, yeah, that totally makes sense. He's like, okay, now I'm going to go pray over there, and you guys stay awake. Okay.
They're like, dude, we just had five glasses of wine.
Yeah, no.
And it's really potent wine.
The best wine ever, apparently.
Yeah. So in the story here, he said he'd be leaving them soon, but they didn't really understand what he was talking about. So the bears do gloss over the whole one of you will betray me part, which is kind of a big part of the story.
Yeah, well, it does say that Judas turned him in.
Yeah.
In the other book. In the play version, it doesn't have that.
Right. So, yeah, again, in the play, we're skipping right to Jesus getting arrested in the garden. And I do like that they illustrate that it's a garden by having him pray at a tulip bed.
I love the costumes of the centurions, like very detailed. They even have the little shin guards.
They do.
Yeah. And then there's the crew member in the back peeking around. Very accurate.
Right, right.
As a theater kid, that was me.
There's some nice backdrops that have been patched. I do like the way the illustration shows that they've been doing this play every year. Like, there's so many patches and tears in this backdrop.
Accurate. You can see our Christmas, we don't do an Easter pageant, but that we do a passion reading, but it's in church, so we don't have costumes.
Yeah.
Our Christmas pageant sets are elaborate cardboard stand-ups, you know?
Yeah.
Lots of duct tape on the back, though.
I get so many ads for Oriental Trading Company, but they have a huge Easter section. I get so many ads for the giant, well, we'll get to it, but the rollaway stone and cave thing. They want me to buy one of those so bad. I'm kind of tempted to. I don't know what I do with it, but they're really good at pushing that on me.
I have this squeezy stress ball of a rock. It says, Jesus is my rock. And I'm at St. Stephen's, who was stoned to death. So I was like, I should give these out to my parishioners, but after church.
Right.
So they don't like my sermon, I won't get a stone. That's right.
But if you got stoned by one of those.
It wouldn't hurt. It would just be kind of funny.
Yeah. And a little insulting, I guess. If you... Like, you don't want that in your sermon. So we get the okay. So then they move on to the. Oh, and by the way, because I'm talking about it so much, the second book is just the story of Jesus as told by Papa to the kids. Like that's
right.
It.
It's
that's
not
literally
a play.
It. There's not even a whole lot of like Berenstain Bears story. They ask him for a story and he tells them he's telling them the Easter story. That's it.
Yeah, and they do the candy thing again.
Yeah. But we get two different illustrations of the arrest of Jesus. We get, and they both involve Judas, but Judas is only called out in the second book. In the play, we see a guy pointing out Jesus to the guards, but Judas is called out by name in the second book. And I like how Mike decides to illustrate this scene by suddenly the bears don't have big expressive eyes. Judas and Jesus suddenly get these weird, like, just like Jesus looks so disappointed in Judas. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole dilemma about Judas.
Yeah.
Is it was all a part of the plan, right? So Jesus knew this was going to happen. So what's the problem? Like, it's one of those roundabout, you know, time travel-esque type things.
Right.
Like, well, if that was part of the plan, then why is Judas bad? Judas was just doing what God wanted him to do.
Right.
Right. So it's like, well...
But I feel like, I don't know, to me, when that argument comes up, there's always that sort of nitpicky... I mean, obviously it's nitpicky because we're nitpicking it. But to me, the circular argument of it was always kind of part of the, to me, growing up was always kind of the magic of the story, which was like, yeah, wheels are in motion. And even if you call them out, it's going to, and that's one of the things that I felt like dramatizations of the story always had to work around, like why Judas is doing this, like why he felt so strongly about it, because Judas doesn't get a whole lot of mention in the Gospels.
Not really. No, I mean, but he was Dracula. So according to Dracula 2000, if you ever watched that movie, Gerard Butler is Judas.
Yeah, I forgot that he did become Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
Which,
well, there's two different fates of Judas, right, in the scriptures. One is he tries to give the money back. He feels really guilty and tries to get the money back. And then he dies by suicide, mm-hmm, because he feels so guilty.
Right.
And the other one is he trips and falls and his guts spill out all over the ground. And then named the field of blood. And it's just like, he just tripped and fell and his guts spilled around.
Which is one of those things where it's like, we backward wrote this death. Like, that was one of those things where you're like, okay, this thing is called this. We've got to figure out why this works. Probably because gut spill. Why would gut spill? Well, because he fell over.
He fell down and his stomach opened up. Yeah, he was a Kirid.
He was a Kirid. He fell over and all of his guts poured out.
Well, you know, and then it's not mentioned at all in the other one, the other two Gospels. So it's like, who knows? So I always go with Judas repented, so he's probably in heaven too. Because if God is a God that forgives people who really repent, and he repented, so he should be there too.
We know he's in heaven because he comes down and he sings a whole song.
Oh, yeah.
With all the angels. And he dances, and it's a pretty great number.
That's the best song of that play, honestly.
It was the first song of that play.
It was the best one.
That thing was released as a single before the play was written. Like, they wrote this song. They just wrote us. They were like, what should we write a song about? And they were like, how about Jesus from Judas's perspective? That's a hit, right? And they were like, I guess it's the 70s or the late 60s. Let's just roll the dice and see where this goes. And a couple of kids from England became two of the most popular and successful musical theater writers of all time.
Yes. And then it goes down to high school when I got to be leper number one.
Yes. But that's a great scene.
See my eyes, I can hardly see. That was my line.
Did your Jesus yell, leave me alone, or heal yourselves at the end of
that? Heal yourselves.
Okay. There's two variants, and you can do either one. Heal yourselves is more dramatic than leave me alone.
Yeah, get away from me. Don't touch me. That's what I say every day to my kids. Stop touching me.
Right. Stop touching me. Oh, now I know how Jesus felt. in any case, so they take him to prison. He gets tried by Pilate. Or as they say in the play, a wicked judge.
The wicked judge. Yeah. And, you know, since this is a very good version of the story, I'm going to nitpick here too. It says Pilate ordered Jesus to be put to death. And then it says in the very first Easter, in the play, it says ordered Jesus to be put to death by hanging on a wooden cross. Not 100% accurate.
It says that in the other version too.
Right. Yeah.
Ordered Jesus to be hanging him on a wooden cross. Yeah.
Well, that's accurate. But the whole point of the Pilate part is that Pilate finds him innocent.
Right.
And he asks the crowd, well, what do you want me to do? I can set this guy free or I can set this other criminal free, because he would always release one criminal at Passover as like a treat. And they said Barabbas. So he released Barabbas, and the crowd told him to crucify Jesus. But he was like, he said, this man has done nothing wrong. What do you want? Why should I crucify him? And the crowd got all upset. So he said, you know, he washes his hands. That's where you get it. So he went and washed his hands and he said, okay, kill him. I mean, that's a little bit of detail to put into a kid's book.
Right.
But it's good to note that Pilate, you know, wasn't the only villain in the story. There's lots of villains in the story, but, you know, I always tell my prisoners to put themselves into the story. Mm. You know, I said, would you be one of the disciples who all ran away? P.S. except the women, P.S. I'm a very big proponent of it. Gotta give the women their credit.
Heck yes.
And in the story, would you be in the crowd? Would you just follow the crowd because this guy's out on the outlier? So you're just gonna go along with it to keep the status quo? It's like, oh, the economy. Yes. Not to get into that.
No, go ahead.
But screw the economy. People are dying, right? So, you know, people tend to follow crowds. And so I say, like, you could have been in the crowd. Are you the crowd? Are you Pilate? He's like, well, you know, this guy's pretty innocent, but everybody else wants me to do it, so I'm going to do it, you know? It's not an easy thing to boil down. It's very complex, which is why we're still talking about it after 2,000 years.
And it is interesting because it is such a political discussion, like, especially when it comes to the trial and everything. Like, you're dealing with a guy, Pilate, who was a ruler, not even a ruler. What is he? Kind of like a.
He was appointed by the Romans.
Yeah.
So he was like a, what does they call that? I don't remember, but yeah, he was appointed as the ruler.
Yeah, but like it's a political position. It's not an inherited right. position. It's you can lose this position. You can get in trouble from Caesar if you don't do things right. And once you start delving into that stuff, it just makes this whole thing just it's such a mess. Not to mention the fact that, as they say, like there were other people running around at the time claiming to be the Messiah. So. He was just like, oh my gosh, another one of these guys. Like,
he's not doing any harm. What's the problem?
Right.
You know, that's what Pilate was saying. He's like, well, so what? He thinks he's the Messiah. Who cares?
Now, all credit to Mike on this one, though, for removing any of the anti-Semitic implications from this part of the story. Because when someone,
yes.
like, say, Mel Gibson tells the tale, it takes on a whole new meaning.
That's awful. I mean, yeah. The whole anti-Semitic thing is dumb. He's like, oh, the Jewish people killed Jesus. I'm like, everybody was Jewish in the story. There was no other really, you know, it was that. It was Roman or Israelite. Like, it wasn't, people lose all sense when they read this stuff. And then, you know, my person would be like, oh, well, getting too political. The Bible, the church isn't political. I'm like, have you read this book?
Right.
It's all political intrigue. Socialism, give to everybody, pool your resources and share. It says it literally in the Bible. You should pool all your resources and distribute between everybody. Hello.
Why, that anyway. Sounds like Raffish Ralph talk.
Oh yes, I'm gonna get run off. I literally have a contract, but you literally cannot get rid of me. So. It's funny.
It's good to know. And I have a podcast. Can't get rid of me.
Yeah, because it's free.
Going on 7 years. So then we cut right to the crucifixion. Of course, this skips over a lot of the bloodier parts of the story.
Yeah,
obviously,
skipped all the whipping and the
dragging the cross through town. And I will say that in regards to the Mel Gibson movie, The Passion of the Christ, there was one moment in that movie that made me cry like a baby against my better judgment. And it's when Jesus is walking through town. He has to carry the cross. And of course, he's wrecked because it's the Mel Gibson movie. And he trips and falls, as he does in the story. And Mary has like pushed her way to the front of the crowd. She's trying to see her son. She's trying to find him. And she gets there and she sees him trip and fall. And there's like that brief flash to her suddenly getting this memory of Jesus falling when he's running to her as a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And how he starts crying and she runs over. That just, you show a kid get hurt and a parent like in a movie, I'm waterworks.
I never finished that movie. I started it and I found it so horrendously bad.
It's a bad movie.
I stopped watching it.
I saw it in the theater.
Mm.
After work one. I was working at a bookstore at the time. And I was like, I gotta see what this is all about. Went to go see it. And grueling experience. Don't take your kids.
No. People assume that like I love that movie. or God's Not Dead, which is reprehensible movie. And all those weird Christian movies, like The Kid Who Went to Heaven and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, I'm not as offended by the theology as I'm offended by the terrible filmmaking. I was a film major in college, and I was like, this movie is just horrible to watch.
Oh, there's some bad theology in those Kirk Cameron movies.
There are terrible. I mean, come on. I've watched Left Behind, and I'm just like, Nicolas Cage, I mean, I know you need money for your pyramid or whatever, but come on. You have to do this garbage? I mean, the Nicolas Cage one actually wasn't too bad, because they really, they kind of liberaled it up a bit.
Yeah.
I watched the original one. You know, and it was just, I was just like, what is this garbage? Yeah. That's not in the Bible either. I mean, we can talk about that in another podcast. That's rapture, all that stuff.
Premillennial, that like, yeah, that's all. That's 19th century on.
And it's only in America.
American theology.
Literally a farmer.
Yes.
In the 1800s came up with this idea. And it literally, it's a very American idea.
Yeah. Because as you
like
said,
a lot of things.
Wasn't any TV at the time.
Maybe ate the wrong kind of mushroom out in the woods.
Hey, you know
that
what?
Day.
A revivalist preacher comes to your town. It's something to do.
And it's exciting.
You go to the tent. The guy's got songs. He's dancing around. So then Jesus dies. And in both versions of the book, we get kind of shadowy representation of the three crosses. Mm-hmm. Only in the second book do we really get kind of a shadowy image of Jesus. You can see a little bit of an outline of the man himself, like hanging on the
cross.
Yeah,
a little bit. He looks pretty ripped too.
He
I love ripped crucifix Jesus or sexy blue Jesus. Do you ever see sexy blue Jesus?
I've never seen blue, no.
It's like a statue on a church and it has a blue light on it and it had its own Facebook page for a while, which I think is gone now, but it was really funny.
I mean, of course, we can get into the history of interpretations of the visual representation of Jesus and the way that has changed over the years, the way it represents the desires and the intentions of the artists and the people it's being made for. Like, that's you might say that there's a whole master's degree in that.
There are, yeah. Yes. Yeah, there is. Art history. And then I wrote in my book, it says, Jesus died and some of his friends carried his body to a tomb. And I wrote, Joseph of Arimathea. Yeah.
There
he
is.
I grew up watching Monty Python a lot, too.
And of course, anyone who grew up in England would know all this stuff like the back of their hand, because everyone got this in school.
Mm-hmm.
So his friends carry him his body away. In both versions, says his friends, just some friends. His pals.
Just his buddies.
He dies. They carry it to the tomb. Oh, and it does talk about the winds rise, the sky grows dark. But it doesn't talk about like the cracking of the temple or anything. But
yeah, that might be a little bit too much.
Yeah. But
detail.
It does get into that. And that was one of those other things that I didn't see in a lot of childhood books. Was the sort of supernatural, like, oh, this goes beyond just like a guy getting hung on a cross. Like, this is like disrupting the natural order of things. And I will say, when I was in high school, my friends had a book of Bible stories, illustrated book of Bible stories. And its interpretation of the crucifixion was fascinating to me. I'd never seen it before, but it was its drawing of the crucifixion. It was a painting for kids' book, you know, a kid's illustration. But its Jesus was not crucified on a cross, but was crucified on a post.
Mm-hmm.
His hands were above his head, and there was no T on the post. He was just crucified like that. And I had never seen this in any children's book before. Everything else was fairly typical, but that one illustration, I was like, you're going way off the pattern here, like for a kid's book of Bible stories.
That's interesting.
And it's something that I know I looked up years ago to see, like, what's that all about? I guess there's like some traditions where they're like, if for a while, I guess some people were like, we don't know if it was a cross, and some people were
it's
tied
true
up on posts.
If you look at the original text, it, you know, if you always go back, well, the original text.
Oh, right.
I don't know. But, you know, the old Latin, ancient Greek texts, you know, it's a lot of a different interpretation. It's hard. Studying dead languages is very difficult.
Yeah.
Because even at the time when Jesus was alive, biblical Hebrew was dead language.
Yeah.
So it was like, it was dead already at that time. And they read it from their, you know, Torah scrolls. And, but it wasn't spoken then either. And modern Hebrew is very different, you know, so it's hard to do that ancient language stuff. Oh, I have a point of information, which is unrelated.
Okay.
If you watch the movie Carrie, when she's praying in the closet, that is not Jesus. That is Saint Sebastian. I just have to tell everybody that.
Because everyone says, what's with the freaky Jesus?
What's with the freaky Jesus with the arrows? It's not Jesus. It's Saint Sebastian. Look it up.
Why would look someone, up Saint Sebastian. Why would someone pray to Saint Sebastian?
I'm not 100% sure what that's about, but
you were shut in a closet and forced to do it by Piper Laurie.
Well, she was, I don't know if her particular offshoot of radical, you know, fundamentalism is a real one or if Stephen King kind of made it up.
Stephen King and made it up.
So he could have just looked up old saints, because saints do get lots of followings. Like there's a whole arm of Christianity that follows John the Baptist.
Yeah.
And then there's the Coptic Christians in Egypt who, you know, follow more saints from there. So, you know, it's just like whoever you pick that you like the best. But yeah, but they never say it in the movie, which is to De Palma's credit, I guess, that he just kind of left it as an open thing instead of spelling it out like a lot of movies would.
Which is why I always find it funny when someone on Facebook is like, ugh, Christianity. And I'm like, that's a broad umbrella term. Like there's a lot of different traditions within that broad term, in case you weren't familiar. Because I think when people say it on Facebook, they tend to mean American evangelical,
right?
Premillennial dispensationalists.
You meet someone and I meet them and like, oh, well, I'm Episcopalian. And they go, I'm Christian. And I go, uh-huh.
Right.
And I'm like, okay,
there's
goodbye.
There's an entire emo Phillips routine about that. So they put him in the tomb. They roll the giant stone over it. You can buy your own from Oriental Trading.
Yeah.
He's in the tomb for 2 days. Guards are posted outside the tomb, and they're not happy about it because it's raining on them, and they are cheesed. And then it says he was in the tomb for 2 days, and on the third day, some women who Jesus knew.
Mary, Magdalene, I think Joanna, or maybe not Joanna. Well, only Mary Magdalene is named.
And they were like, wait a minute, the stone is rolled away. And an angel comes out. Jesus is not in the tomb. Angel comes out, says, don't be afraid. Jesus is alive once more. But I love the drawing from the second book, because the angel doesn't just come out.
He's sitting with his legs and arms folded on top of the stone with this like half smirk. Like, hey, yeah, I'm an angel.
Mm-hmm.
Get over it.
One of my favorite Berenstain Bears illustrations. I didn't know that an angel could cross its legs like that.
Well, what do angels really look like? They're horrific looking. Mm-hmm. If you know, with all the different faces and wings and eyeballs. Yeah, and then it's just interesting they chose the angel version, because there's other versions too. Like Mary goes and it's empty and she comes out and a man says, Mary, and she supposes it's the gardener.
Right.
And says, where have you taken my Lord? And he says, it's me. So that's one. And then there's another one where they go in and there's like a young boy in there. And then Jesus appears. And then there's the one with the angel. So
yeah, the angel's a little more dramatic.
That's the more, you know, visually interesting as well for storytelling purposes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can hear my bells.
I can't.
Okay, good. We have a bell tower at noon. They play hymns.
Wow. That's nice. I don't have that.
Yeah,
I do have a clock tower behind me from Back to the Future.
I see, and I love your Homestar Runner.
Yeah. So Jesus, or as in Mel Gibson's version, you see like his foot, and then like his clenched fist, and then like he rises up, and then the movie just ends.
Boom. Yeah, because Jesus was really into clenched fists.
He was sort of upset, I think, is the point at the end of that movie.
But he knew this was going to happen. Like, I mean, he knew he was going to get murdered and come back.
Yeah.
So but then he's mad about it.
I mean,
well,
still
he does kind of.
Still kind of stinks. It's still.
Isn't that pleasant? Yeah.
It's still a pleasant way to go.
I love, and then the women run off to tell the disciples.
Yeah.
Right. And then I wrote in here, men didn't believe them. We have to remember that.
Yes. Wasn't there a Thomas? Wasn't
no, that's later. That's
That's later in the story.
First, the women who saw the angel run to tell the disciples.
Okay.
Jesus is risen. He's gone. And they're like, oh, shut up, woman. I'm going to go look. And then they go look. And then they see the angel. And then they're like, oh, Jesus is risen. And I'm the one that discovered it. Me, the man. He didn't actually say that.
I mean, okay. If a woman I loved and trusted in my life came up to me and was like, I just saw an angel. And this guy who just died, he's back. I might go and check for myself, regardless of who
too,
it was.
But Jesus said that's what he was going to do. So I was like, I told you 20 times that I was going to come back.
You have to admit that the apostles in the story aren't always the quickest bunch. Throughout the Gospels, Jesus tends to get a little frustrated at them sometimes.
Yeah, because they're us. They're our eyes and ears mm-hmm. in the story. So, like Peter, they call the rock. Mm-hmm. Jesus liked to do puns.
Yeah.
So if you read it in Greek, and I had one professor say that he called Peter the rock because he was so stupid he had rocks in his head. So he called it that. That was one theory. Yeah. And then it changed to being the rock upon which the church is founded. But originally the nickname was, you know, because he was so thick-headed, I guess.
Right.
And he made nicknames for everybody. Simon Peter. Your name is Simon. I'm going to call you Peter.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure, whatever.
I just like the idea of being like, I'm going to call you the rock. He's like, oh, because I'm like, I'm so steadfast. Like I'm a strong foundation. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah. I'm going to call you bag of hammers.
Yeah, box of rocks. And then, like, James and John were the sons of Zebedee, right? We called mm-hmm. them the sons of thunder was their nickname because their mother was very pushy. She appears and it nags Jesus. And then he starts calling them the sons of thunder.
That's great. It's kind of like that scene in Full Metal Jacket where all the guys get their nicknames, only far less obscene.
You're Tex, even though you're from Cleveland. Right. You Tex.
So Jesus shows up to his pals. We get a couple of very similar drawings of three guys. Jesus is like, has a look on his face like, what can you do?
And that's where Thomas comes in. This is the Thomas part, because Thomas was out when Jesus showed up.
I see.
And then when he comes back, he's like, I missed it. What? I want to see. So he's not really doubting Thomas. He's more like, what? I missed it. Oh, no, Thomas.
Show me.
Yeah. Show me, too. I want to see, too. He just wanted to get what everyone else got.
Oh, you want to see the magical return?
Yeah, I would like to see the magical return.
Yeah, I kind of do. It sounds like it'd be pretty awesome. I was out getting you guys your stuff.
Right, like I was out buying dinner or whatever he was doing.
Oh, look at old Doubting Thomas.
Yeah, and then he got saddled with Doubting Thomas, but then Jesus made him sweat it out for a week.
Yeah.
And then he came back.
he'll do that.
Poor Thomas.
So Jesus is like, go and spread the good news. And then 40 days later, he rises up to heaven to be with God, his Father.
Ascension Day. Woo.
There he goes. They're all looking up. In the play, they're on a little platform, and there's a light coming down. And we get essentially the same image in the storybook version.
Right, yeah, basically.
And he goes up to heaven. And that's like the... would you say that's a good encapsulation of the Easter story?
Yes, I give it a stamp of approval. I would let my kids read this book.
Yeah, it doesn't get weird. It doesn't get preachy or moralizing anyway. He's just like, here's the story.
Right, but it's not also glossing over the actual story. Because sometimes you get it, it's like, Jesus was a nice guy.
Yeah.
And then he died. And now we celebrate his return. What?
And then Miss Ursula is like, you can still eat candy.
You can.
Like, you don't have to worry about that.
Just not black jelly beans, lady. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. She said, those are mine. She does say that. She's like, I wouldn't want to miss my black jelly beans. You're like, go for it, Miss Ursula.
She probably likes those anise flavored Necco wafers too. Yes.
I like pastilles. The anise pastilles. That's great, Miss Ursula. Neccos. And they say hooray, and she says Hosanna, he is risen. And brother and sister say amen to that. And yeah, and then she bumps fists with them.
Goes, the proper answer is he is risen, and you say the Lord is risen indeed.
Yeah.
A word. I can't say the A word because it's Lent.
There you go.
A word.
And there's a bunch of questions and activities afterwards. We kind of covered them. Why is she teaching them about this? What did Jesus do for people?
I don't think I got the questions.
Oh, you didn't? There's a series of... we covered it. Why is Easter such a remarkable holy day for Christians?
It's our biggest holiday, even though Christmas gets the all the flash.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks Christmas is the major day, and it's like, not really. It's actually... Like Easter, Ascension Day, those are the actual more holy days.
Because like without the Easter Ascension, that's kind of like the crux of everything. Like,
right, that's what the religion is based on.
That's what all those letters of Paul are about.
I mean, Jesus' birthday was put on the Saturnalia festival, you know.
Yeah.
To kind of convert the pagans, and they're like, oh, well, Jesus was born here.
Yeah, people forget that birthdays, even in general, weren't a huge deal once upon a time. Like, the only people who had their birthdays written down were, like, kings. Like, uh-huh. Everyone else had their baptisms day recorded.
Right, yeah.
That was important. But the day you were born was just, like, yeah. I remember, I think it was Philippa Gregory talking about how hard it was to write books about the women of, like, the Wars of the Roses, because she's like, no one knew when they were born because no one wrote down anything about the daughters. And so you had to figure it out from context clues.
Definitely. I was doing a wedding preparation with a couple the other day, and I was just explaining about record keeping. I said, well, before the government kept track of these things, the church kept track of these things, which is why before a certain time, if you wanted to find out your great-great-great-great-grandfather's birthday, you'd have to go to the church where he was baptized and get his baptismal certificate. And then you could see when he was born.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you would have, if you wanted to know that somebody was married, you could find it in the church record. I said, now it's kept track by the government. So church weddings are kind of not necessary unless you're religious.
Right.
Which is what I tell people. I say, you don't have to get married in a church because the government keeps track of your wedding.
Right. Yeah. So there's just two little things and then we're done, which is one is go out and do it, which is plan an Easter egg hunt for young children in your neighborhood or the preschool class in your Sunday school.
I got that covered.
Put special messages about God's love in plastic eggs and hide them. Have the children gather after the hunt and help them read their messages.
Oh, that's a good one. We usually do that. We have some little, I think we don't really do candy because everybody's allergies.
Right.
So we kind of do like little toys, oriental trading.
Yeah. Little squeezable rocks.
Yeah. The squeezable rocks are like little slinkies or bracelets or whatever. And also if you're doing it outside, you put chocolate inside, they melt. It just melts into mush
or
in the egg.
As we discovered from Mitzi's preschool when they would do egg hunts, the eggs just end up filled with ants.
Is how
it just ends up after a few minutes. The second activity, easier to accomplish, plan and perform an Easter play similar to this one. If possible, perform the whole church or the Sunday school parents and students. Just put on a play.
I used to do it when I was a kid with my neighborhood friends.
There you go.
We actually do. The kids have been practicing their passion play. They do it on Palm Sunday, though. We don't do it on Easter. So on Palm Sunday, the Sunday school comes to church and does the passion play. And I sit and smile because it's so fun. I love it when the kids come and do stuff for us. We also have on All Saints Day, we have the parade of saints. And each kid takes a saint and reads like a bio about it.
Aww.
It's cute.
Well, speaking of what we do on Easter Sunday, Lauren, would you join me next week to discuss The Berenstain Bears, Easter Sunday, a book where we talk about the ins and outs of what goes on in that big boat-shaped church building that the Bears keep going in and out of.
And this preacher who just never has a sermon ready.
No, you got to let the congregation lead the sermon.
Yeah, exactly. I should try that.
Anybody have anything to say? No, not you. Oh, and definitely not you. Anyone else?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I have to have a list of people. Nope.
A little seating chart. Just don't let B34 say anything during the sermon. But I would love to have you back to discuss the next book in our Easter trilogy.
Woohoo. Oh, trilogy, like the Triduum.
I guess. I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and Holy Saturday is one long service called the Triduum.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad I could be biblical in some way. Or
liturgical, really.
There's going to be a third Boondock Saints movie. So kind of.
Oh, God, no. Ah, Duffy.
And on that, where can our listeners find you if they're looking for you?
Well, you can find me at, I have a website, therevlauren.com, which I never update, but you can go there if you want. Fire truck.
There you go.
Or you can look up St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Port Washington, New York.
Nice.
That's where I am. And I'm at therevlauren on Twitter.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. And you can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast or at P. Corey Gonzalez if you want things to get a little saltier. You can also listen to my other two podcasts. It's Del Toro Time, where I discuss mostly movies with my child Willow, or Pizza Toast, a podcast I do with my friend Christy Admiral, where we used to discuss The Babysitter's Club, and now we are discussing the Georgia Nicholson series. And yes, The Babysitter's Club Netflix series was canceled. Don't despair. There's always plenty of stuff about young teen girls for us to talk about on the show. Because that's kind of just become the theme of that show now, is teen girl stuff for. And
something you know a lot about.
Hey, I have a little bit of experience.
You have a teen girl daughter.
I do. So if you're looking for a 45-year-old man's take on that subject, tune into Pizza Toast. Otherwise, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
And I'll see the rest of you next time deep in Bear Country.